Proverbs 23, we're going to read verses 1 through 3 as our text passage that we'll be speaking from and considering this morning and perhaps in some weeks to come. But let's begin with Proverbs 23, verses 1 through 3, where the author says, "When you sit down to eat with a ruler, consider carefully what is before you, and put a knife to your throat if you are a man given to appetite. Do not desire his delicacies, for they are deceptive food." And let's pause and bow our heads together once again. Father in heaven, we thank you, Lord, that you are first and foremost our ruler and overruler. The King of kings and Lord of lords is our King, Father, and we answer to no one but you first and foremost. But Lord, I pray that you would help us to have an understanding of those things that we allow to have authority in our lives, Father. Certainly we obey you, Lord, as we submit to those authorities that we must obey to. But help us not to allow anyone or anything to rule us in a manner that you would not have, Father. Help us to submit to you and your will for us. Father, open up this word to our hearts, Lord. Help us to understand even the pointed and simple things, straightforward, and apply it to our lives so that we might benefit eternally. I praise you, Lord, and ask that you be honored this morning. I ask all these things in the name of your Son, Jesus. Amen. Before we go forward, just a blast from the past here for you. If you grew up in the Kansas City metro area, back in the early 80s, I would say, and furthermore, if you're someone around my age that watched Saturday morning cartoons around those days in the early 80s, then you probably at one time was introduced to a young man termed as Billy Smith, expert tree climber. Does this ring a bell to anybody? Billy Smith, expert tree climber. Let me just say it this way. I've been climbing trees all my life, but not trees that are near overhead lines. Does that ring a bell to anybody at all here besides me? No. Thank you, Joel. Whew. Man. Well, I could go on. Because if you touch one of those lines, or your weight makes a branch touch one of those lines, it'll send that electricity right to you. And that can hurt. It may even kill you. And climbing utility poles is really dumb. So remember, always look up before climbing, and please stay out of trees that are near overhead lines. It was a public service announcement. PSA. It was a kid that was climbing down a tree and speaking those words, and I quoted them almost verbatim. Billy Smith has been lost into the annals of video history. They can't find this commercial. I've looked a number of times because this was one of the most influential commercials of my time. Evidently, it's for KCPNL. I'm going to leave Billy Smith alone since no one here knows it, but Joel, we'll fellowship later, Joel, you and me. That being said, it was a PSA. And I read about it, and I read about the woman who created this public service announcement and what her intents were and how it developed. Again, it meant something to me when I was a kid. Obviously, I still remember it some 33 years later. But that being said, it was a public service announcement. If you don't know what those are, they are those commercials or ads or the like that are intended to, well, serve the public and make an announcement to the public regarding an education of a situation or an informing of a situation and a protection of the public from something that is dangerous to them typically. That was intended to keep kids from touching transformers, climbing trees, touching power lines, climbing utility poles, which is really dumb, as Billy told us. All of those different things. You might be familiar with the Just Say No campaign. You might be familiar with Smokey the Bear, Only You Can Prevent Forest Fires, so on and so forth. This is your brain. This is your brain on drugs. Remember those things? PSAs, public service announcements. Now, in my estimation, a good public service announcement, a good PSA, has to have three qualities. I call them the three I's of the PSA. They have to be informative. They have to be imploring to the public. And they have to be intended for the good of the listener. They have to be informative, telling you what the issue is. They have to implore on that one the importance of being protected and listening to what that information is telling them. And it has to be intended for their good. this morning, saints, and in the days to come, I say days, I'm not sure how long this will be stretched out into. This morning is just a very pointed introduction. But this lesson, or this series, is a PSA taken from Proverbs 23. And I hope that you will find it and receive it in the manner that I'm attempting to present it to you, as being informative, as being imploring upon you, or imploring of you, and certainly, certainly intended for your good. Now, I don't typically get super specific topical about things, particularly as they apply to pop culture or society or those sorts of things. I kind of take the approach, not the umbrella approach, but I kind of take the approach that's indicated here in Matthew 6:33, where Jesus said, "Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you." I take that in application to our considering the things of God and his direction for us oftentimes, and that if you seek God first, then putting him in that top position as the priority, as the most important thing and being and person in your life, then as you seek him, much of what happens underneath takes care of itself. And I don't have to address specifics and all kinds of different things that can be awkward from the pulpit or can be uncomfortable or just not necessarily necessary to address. But sometimes we're intended to look specifically at things, at specifics, at pointed, very present, very modern and upfront things. And I think that this morning is one of those times when there's a clear and a present danger, where those things can sneak up on people, God's people in particular, unexpectedly, and where they may even have a hold on us already, whether we know it or not. And maybe we absolutely have a full understanding of this. And so that's what we're going to consider this morning, and perhaps in the mornings to come as part of this mini-series. Let's look and see what this proverb is trying to tell us in the first three verses and how we're going to apply it to something rather specific for us today. Now, it begins as a warning, just as all good public service announcements do. Let's read the first verse. "When you sit down to eat with a ruler, consider carefully what is before you." Now, you might sit and think to yourself, "I don't hang out with a lot of rulers. I don't hang out with a lot of dignitaries or people who are on a throne or anything of the like. So how does this apply?" Well, we'll get there. But as you look at this, it does say consider carefully, meaning think about it, take care to focus and to actually apply your mind to this on what is before you. It might sound a little bit cryptic, it might sound a little bit foreboding, and so we need to have more information on what it's imploring us to do. So let's consider what a ruler is. A ruler is one who holds dominion or authority. Again, that can be that person that I implied, sitting on a throne. It can be someone, having some measure of dominion, perhaps not over a kingdom, but over a corporation, let's say, or over a fire company, or over a household or a family. Someone who holds some measure of dominion and authority. And it can be all the way down to the family unit. For better or for worse, a leader is someone who holds influence and authority. And so I'll give you an example of for the better. At least I trust that it is when it's applied in a godly manner. Carried out in an appropriate manner, a godly husband is indeed someone who is, can be a ruler. A godly husband in a godly marriage is an example of the better. This was, unfortunately, part of the judgment on Eve and on womanhood, was to identify the man as such in Genesis 3:16. Uses this term that we're considering right here. "To the woman he said, I will greatly multiply your sorrow and your conception." This being after she sinned, took part of that fruit that the Lord told her not to. "In pain you shall bring forth children." And then it goes on to say this, "Your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you." Have dominion, have authority. He will carry the pinnacle of authority in the relationship. Now you understand, and I trust that you understand. If you don't understand, come and see me, and I will make sure that I do whatever I can to help you to understand. But if you've been in this place and heard how I preach the family relationship, you understand that this authority and this rulership is not authoritarian. It does not mean it's at the Well, at the opposition and full sway over everything, that's not how the Bible presents it. It's not authoritarian, it's not tyrannical rule over that household. It's actually an encouragement to faith is what it is. It's intended to be a responsibility for the presence of things godly in that household. There are other things that apply, but yeah. A husband is indeed intended to be a ruler, so to speak. Now, there are poor examples of rulership, and that's any ungodly authority. Any ungodly authority that abuses their position, abuses their place, abuses their authority, even if it hurts people. Jeremiah 23 is where God speaks of, well, those shepherds who destroy and scatter the sheep of my pasture. Can pastors / ministers or quote-unquote pastors and ministers be bad rulers? Yes, absolutely they can. As can be dictators and tyrants, ungodly husbands, government leaders, so on and so forth. Bad rulers, good rulers, those with dominion and authority. Now, here's the kicker. Rulers don't have to be people at all, though. Things that rule do not have to be persons. And for this lesson, for this series, we're going to look at something that holds great dominion, holds great power, great influence over a great number of us. Furthermore, it's something that we hand over our authority to, in a manner of speaking, I will say. We can remove its rulership, we can remove its influence at any time that we want to, and yet we have a very, very difficult time removing its authority over our lives, removing its influence over our being, I guess you might say. And I would say, any guesses? But I'm not going to ask for your guesses. I'll just let you think to yourself, and then later on you can say, I knew what you were talking about. But I would say, oftentimes this thing that rules us is the first thing we see in the morning, and oftentimes it's the last thing we see at night. And I have it present with me right here. This is it now. Some of you were here not long ago when I gave a lesson, and I had this little picture up there. If you can't see it, that's my beloved wife there at 6 years old or something along those lines. So it's not all bad, these phones. They can present something sweet to us and that sort of thing. But let me tell you something about these phones. For most of us, they hold a great deal of authority. They rule people to some measure. Now, some of you are like, probably like, really? This is what we're doing today? And other people are probably like this. Some of you might be something along like, you know? If you're doing this sort of thing this morning, well, this is for you. I don't want to single anybody out, but I will put up a bit of a disclaimer. Some people don't have an issue. Let's just call it that. Let's just say it as it is. Some people are absolutely not influenced by the cell phone at all. Brother Gary's not here this morning, so he can't correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm fairly confident he doesn't even own one. Doesn't own one, and he's not interested in it. We've had conversations about everything he's missing out. You know, I keep trying to get him to get an Instagram, keep trying to get him to look at TikTok and all of those things. He refuses. He's just missing out. The Kims are no longer here. They're on their way up, but Ashley's dad, Tom Walden, still rocks a flip phone. You ever try texting that man? He's rubbish at texting because he's still 1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-6-6-6-6-2-2-2-2-2-2 because he's trying to cycle through. He doesn't have a keyboard, and so certainly he's not on social media. He'd be terrible at it. He's not ordering anything off of Amazon on his phone. Isn't he just missing out? Man, the guy just has no clue. There will be those, perhaps there are those ones present here, Brother Gary notwithstanding, who have little exposure to the things that I'm going to be referring to today and in the weeks to come, who have little influence by this cell phone, this thing that I'm actually pointing as being the ruler, an example of the ruler that's presented in Proverbs 23. And you might sit and say, well, this has no application to me at all. And if that is the case, I'll just tell you a couple of different things. The same concepts are going to apply to any number of different things in our lives, and perhaps they apply to you. And I will also encourage you to be grateful. Be grateful that you aren't in harm's way when it comes to these things that we're going to be considering. So that disclaimer is passed. So you others, you others who are impacted by this cell phone, you use your phones for everything. We use it to wake us up. We use it, well, did your alarm change for you this morning? Did anyone actually change their clocks like I've been warning you for 2 weeks? Diane, I'm not going to use the O word. Sarah, well, your guys are both old, so I don't know. Ian's an old soul, so, you know, it is what it is. Most everybody else, though, I didn't do anything. I went to bed last night. I didn't even look at my alarm because I have it set to always, always on Saturday morning, 6 a.m. It wakes me up. Always. So I didn't even look at it, and I trusted that little Allie was going to wake me up this morning at 6 o'clock in the morning, even though the time was going to change. And sure enough, she did. It's the first thing that I actually am aware of in the morning. We use it to wake us up. We use it to inform us things, news, weather, whatever else we want to know, where the location of our kids are at. We use it to educate us. You can learn online. There are people at home right now, perhaps with their phones, being educated on their phones as I'm speaking to them about it, perhaps. I don't know. We use it to teach us. We use it for a number of different things along those lines. We certainly use it to entertain us, innocently or otherwise. I'll just leave it at that for the time being. We use it to buy things, to order things, to shop for food, stuff. We can order a ride, someone to come pick us up wherever we're at. We can order that. We can order plane tickets. We can travel with our phones. We can buy just about anything. We take photos. We take videos. We use it to work. I use my phone quite often if I'm sitting in the dentist's office, as I was recently, and it's going to be a little bit of a wait. Pop, 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 pop. Man, I can read my Bible. I can put down notes. I can draft up a sermon right there in the office if I choose to. We can use it to message one another, and oh yeah, we can actually call someone on the phone, although that is something that we don't do very often on our phones. Isn't it remarkable when you think about it? You ones who have hair whiter than mine, you've seen the transition of technology. You've seen the transition of having the phone. Perhaps some of you had the old switchboards where you had to say, hey, hook me up to this or that, or click, 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 or something along those lines. We had a wall phone where you actually had to go, that was grandma's house. Ours had push buttons. Our kids don't know what a rotary dial is, for Pete's sake. They have no idea. But you can do a lot of things on your phone now. And perhaps after all of those things throughout the day, you even use it to put you to sleep again. As I do. I plug in a book, an audio book. I plug in music, whatever the case might be. So it very literally is the first thing that I see in the morning and the last thing that I see at night. And a bunch of things in between. I think it's fair to say that it's the cell phone's world and we're just living in it. That being said, Generation Z, this is the informative part of the PSA. And I might not get through all my notes this morning, and that's okay because I said it was going to be a series. But Generation Zers, and you all know who you are. I'm not even talking about Alpha, although, well, I'll leave my granddaughter out of it, but Generation Alpha is no stranger to the screen either. But Generation Zers average 7 to 9 hours a day in their cell phones. Millennials a tad less, Gen X a tad less than that, and Boomers a tad less than that. But you Boomers, you know your way around that. You know, you can always tell someone who's a Boomer because instead of doing this sort of thing, they're doing this. You know, but they still get around, right? They still know what they're doing. You know, they still get around. You know, they still buy off of Amazon and they do all of those things. The phone rules, saints. The phone rules. The phone has dominion, has some authority. Now, it sounds fun. I mean, and I'm glad you all are joking because or laughing because there is some real comedy about it when you get right down to it. But the fact of the matter is that there is a real authority that it holds over us, a real dominion that it holds over us, and some of it is very, very, very dark. Now, of course, you say, well, yes, but I never go over in this area. This is something that, no, I don't. Man, I'm telling you, there are things that, well, don't have to be just icky and gross to actually completely wreck ourselves, wreck our lives, naturally speaking, and even spiritually speaking. It can cause us some issues. But I'm getting ahead of myself. The phone is that ruler that we're going to consider out of Proverbs 23. Now, again, if you're feeling a little bit panicky this morning, maybe unconsciously drawing that phone to yourself, well then, listen up. This lesson's probably for you. But let me just get ahead of myself and just make clear from the beginning. Billy Smith, expert tree climber, never told us not to climb trees. He never said, don't climb trees. He just said, be careful about it. Always look up before climbing and please stay out of trees that are near overhead lines. I'm not going to tell you to throw away your phone. I'm just going to, well, encourage you to look with me at what the Bible suggests about it. And then use it accordingly. I used to teach first, third, and fifth grade kids fire safety. And one of the things we always said, fire is a tool, it's not a toy. Don't play with it. Use it for what it's intended. Just like a hammer, just like a saw, just like a drill press. Fire is a tool and not a toy. Use the phone for what God would intend it for you, and all will be well. Now, the Bible doesn't say anything about cell phones by name. You don't see anything about Apple. Well, you do see Apple in the Bible, don't you? Perhaps. Not in Genesis. You're not going to see in Genesis, but you might see apples. I don't remember in the Bible now that I think about it, but it wasn't the brand Apple, I will tell you that. It doesn't say anything about the cell phone, nothing about the BlackBerry or, you know, lots of fruits in cell phone lore. No Nokia, let me say it that way. No Nokia in the Bible. But I think that it does indeed say plenty, beginning with our text there. When you sit down to eat with a ruler, consider carefully what is before you. So let's adjust it just a bit. When you sit down with your phone, consider carefully what is before you. Now again, that's a little bit foreboding and a little bit ominous, and rightly so. I will tell you, when you sit down to eat with your phone, I'm very careful, and I've said it a number of times from this platform, I'm careful when it comes to food, what I eat. And not just because I'm a snob, though I am at certain things. Not because I'm just a foodie, but because just putting a very fine point on it, I've made plain, I don't like throwing up. I don't like being sick to my stomach. Now, a lot of you would probably share that with me. I don't think that there's anyone that says, yeah, I dig it. Man, I just really love the dry heaves. Just really just get me going. I don't think anyone is in that position, but I can't stand it. I mean, I almost have a phobia of it. And I haven't done so for about 20 years now. I'm very careful with what I eat. If something looks a little bit off, smells a little bit off, feels a little bit off, tastes a little bit off, I'll sooner put it in the trash than finish it. I'll go hungry. I don't mind saying it. I don't want to be sick. I don't want to invite that into my life. Used to work with a guy who we'd go to the store to get our lunch. He'd go straight to what we called the green meat case to see what was on sale. And it was usually what was out of date that day, or sometimes two, three days out of date. And we called it green meat for a reason, because it was green. Richard didn't care. He'd go on there and he'd grab that, and man, he would just cook it up and eat it with relish. Not me. I'm not going to take a chance with that. I don't take a chance with what I eat because the potential damage is not worth it to me. Do you think that it's not so spiritually? Absolutely it is. Absolutely, we should be, without question, very, very cautious with what we consume spiritually. It goes on in verse 3 in regards to this ruler, and again, we'll call it our phone. Do not desire his delicacies, for they are deceptive food. Further information for you, what are delicacies? Well, the term is only found in this chapter, in this spot here, and a little bit later on in the chapter. It's only found here and also in Genesis 27. I'm not going to, for time's sake, take you there, but you can recall in your own mind Jacob and Esau and their dealings with the blessing and the inheritance and so on and so forth, the birthright, and they're dealing with their dad Isaac. And Isaac, when it was time that he wanted to bless Esau, he said, go Esau, go out into the field and bring back some food for me. Go make a kill and bring back your venison and make it into a delicacy, is what that word is. There it's translated in the New King James Version as savory food. And essentially, when you get right down to it, even if you have one of the study Bibles that matches mine, it says tasty there. Tasty food. Make it into tasty food, Isaac told him. Well, he didn't get it from Esau. He ended up getting some goat from his wife that he didn't know, but evidently he liked it regardless. She knew how to make it. We know delicacies in our society, in our time, as treats and luxuries and something specific to a region or a culture or something along those lines. Something that we look at and we say, wow, this is something special, despite what its health value might be. Southeast Asia, there's something called balut. Anyone had balut before? Brother David might have when he was in Vietnam. I'm not sure. Balut is a duck egg, typically. It's been fertilized. A little embryo has been allowed to grow in there. It has a little beak in it. There's a crunch. They cook that thing, and sometimes they let it ferment, or you might just eat it straight out of the pot. But they say there's a crunch. And it's a... Man, I'm not interested in it, because even if it is cooked and prepared appropriately, I don't feel like eating something and feeling the crunch of a little baby duck bill. Man, sorry kids, trauma this morning. Anyway, it's a delicacy, man. They eat it up. They eat it up there. They enjoy it very much. It's something that they find to be tasty. I don't know what the nutritional value is to balut, but I'm not going to eat it. I do know that there's no nutritional value hardly in a double bacon cheeseburger, man, but I'll eat that like crazy. I'm going to pound that thing. It's something that I consider to be a delicacy. And I'm willing to eat it from time to time, even to the point of replacing things that actually are good for me. That's what a delicacy is. It's a treat that I will say, Lorraine just prayed about itching ears. This satisfies me in a way. This is really getting this. Man, I'm really just jonesing for a balut. I have to have this right now. Forget dinner right now. I'm going to enjoy this right now. Now, in Numbers chapter 11, I'm passing up a bunch of different things for time's sake. In Numbers chapter 11, you might recall, let's turn to Numbers chapter 11, because at some point I need to actually get into Scripture and prove myself, don't I? Turn to Numbers chapter 11. And if you'll remember, in Numbers chapter 11, well, that post-Exodus Israel, they were out. I think this was in year 2 of being in the wilderness. They weren't satisfied with manna. God had already provided them with this provision, this stuff that all they had to do was go out and gather it, and it was good for them, and they didn't have to grow it, they didn't have to do anything for it, didn't have to till the ground, didn't have to do anything but just simply collect it. And you know what? It wasn't good enough for them. They wanted something else, and so they pined for cucumbers, and they pined for, well, what else did they pine for? Onions and leeks and all of those things. It says that the people cried out to Moses and they were unhappy about it. What do we see here? In verse 5 of Numbers 11. We remember the fish which we ate freely in Egypt, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic. But now our whole being is dried up. There's nothing at all except this manna, this perfect provision before our eyes. Something that was good. And so the Lord got upset. He was frustrated. And that's what it says. He was angry with them. And if you move down to verse 31 of Numbers chapter 11, he told them, you're asking for something and you want something that's different than what I've provided. I've provided something perfect for you. And you're going to look for a delicacy here. You want something that was, well, something that is more at the expense of what I've given. Now a wind went out from the Lord and it brought quail from the sea, and left them fluttering near the camp about a day's journey on this side and about a day's journey on the other side, all around the camp and about 2 cubits above the surface of the ground. And the people stayed up all that day, all night, and all the next day and gathered the quail. He who gathered least gathered 10 homers, and they spread them out for themselves all around the camp. But while the meat was still between their teeth before it was chewed, the wrath of the Lord was aroused against the people, and the Lord struck the people with a very great plague. So he called the name of that place Kibroth Hattaavah, because they were buried, or because there they buried the people who had yielded to cravings. They had a desire. They had a desire for these things, and that's exactly what our passage said back in Proverbs 23. It said that they had, it says, well, what did it say? Do not desire his delicacies. Do not lust for, do not covet after something that isn't as beneficial as what you have. And that's exactly what they did. They desired something that wasn't as beneficial as the Lord had for them. Food can be desired by people who are interested in food. People want a specific taste. They want a specific provision to the point that they can even covet after it, lust for it, long after it, as we see here in Numbers 11. Even again to the point of replacing what is actually good for them. They loathed the manna. Naturally speaking, that's not a good thing. But spiritually speaking, can we long for just the tasty things? Well, as far as what satisfies our flesh, just the tasty things, just the delicacies that these devices here will present to us. Joel mentioned it, you know, he kind of walked on my sermon this morning. By walked, I'm fully encouraging of that. Joined right in there and speaking of those things, I think it was in Romans 12 that he was speaking, that those things came from. Listen, there are things that are going to be presented to us that we're going to desire more than the things of God in the moment. And without just pounding the dead horse, hopefully, the phone is going to provide those things. It's going to offer those things. It offers some things that we consider tasty and yummy. Now listen, the more dangerous that the delicacies are, the more dangerous ones that would move us spiritually, well, they are so, well, they're made desirous to us. Let me make myself a little bit clearer there. The more dangerous delicacies that are offered to us by this ruler that is our phone appeals to our flesh specifically and intentionally. And it does so at the expense of good things. We're going to talk about some things that will range the whole gamut of what you can find on your phone. But by and large, all of these things, when you add them together and you read about those ones who have suffered or heard the testimony of those ones who have suffered and allowed themselves to be ruled by the things that these phones and, well, and other devices like it, when they've allowed themselves to be ruled by these things and you hear the testimonies of these ones, you'll find that to the man or woman, there are women involved as well, they went after this, 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 and this, and it was at the cost of family. It was at the cost of relationships. It was at the cost of work quality and sometimes the job entirely. It was at the cost of self-awareness, not even recognizing one's own situation. It was at the cost of their own personal testimony, spiritually and otherwise. It was at the cost of very much their purity and their innocence oftentimes. It was certainly at the cost of time in the Word, understanding of the things of God. Listen, this flesh wants everything that is against spiritual things. We understand this. And when we compromise spiritual things for the sake of the flesh and what the flesh finds to be tasty or a delicacy, when has it ever been profitable to us? When you get right down to it. Romans chapter 7. Romans chapter 7. When has this ever, when we've invested in the things that satisfy the flesh and the flesh first and foremost, when has it ever gotten us a net profit? Well, I would say never. Romans chapter 7, verse 5. For when we were in the flesh, well, the sinful passions which were aroused by the law were at work in our members to bear fruit to death. We didn't get much spiritual profit when we didn't know Jesus, did we? When we were ruled by the flesh, completely owned by the flesh. In the next chapter, same verse, Romans chapter 8 and verse 5. For those who live according to or after or in agreement with the flesh set their minds on the things of the flesh. Romans 8, 5. But those who live according to the Spirit, the things of the Spirit. For to be carnally minded is death, but to be spiritually minded is life and peace. As far as your flesh, what does it bear you? Fruit to death. And those who live according to this set their minds on the things of the flesh and the things that would draw death, that would bring, well, things that separate us from God, at least separation of fellowship for those who know Him. Do you know how much capital is spent on drawing your minds to the things of the flesh? I don't know that all the powers that be, all of the programmers and code writers and analysts and capital investors and so on and so forth, all the people that are behind so much of what's dumped into this phone, I don't know that a one of them goes in and says, let's see, Romans tells us that the flesh desires, okay, so let's really tune into their flesh. No, it just comes natural. It just comes natural, and it comes down oftentimes to the almighty dollar. I'm not talking about Congress meetings and hearings and all that. I'm not talking about Zuckerberg and those, you know, CEOs of TikTok and the like. I'm not talking about anything political at all whatsoever. We're talking spiritual things here and the practicality in our lives. Do you know how much money is spent on causing your eyes to go to their product, whatever that product might be? Whether it's, you know, buying groceries online, whether it's something completely nefarious, whether it's watching reels, I mean, hour after hour after hour, watching videos. And do you know how much money and effort and science is put into analyzing who you are and finding out what you're all about, finding out what tickles your ears, what tickles your flesh, and then feeding into that? I get a little bit angry, and I need to back it up just a little bit, because so much effort is put into finding out what your mind wants, what your flesh wants, and encouraging you, well, to live according to the flesh, setting your minds on the things of the flesh. They analyze your demographics, they analyze your age, your race, your gender, your location, where you are, what the profiles of those around you are, what the tendencies are in your region, and then what your specific tendencies are. They look at your interests, they look at your internet searches, your subscriptions, the apps you have on your phone, what you buy, when you buy, how you buy, your habits, all of these things. Is this a conspiracy theory? I'm not a conspiracy theorist, I promise. I do not wear tinfoil hats. I don't sit and think that the government is just out to, man, the... No, I don't believe any of those things. I just look at what I know and what's presented here. It's all about the algorithm, right? Have you heard that term? The algorithm? They analyze who you are and what you do and what you buy. If it's Diet Coke by the case, day after day, well, then you'll see ads of Diet Coke coming across. If it's other things that are untoward and foul, then you'll see those such things, and they will steer you towards those things. They find out what your weakness is in the flesh. Whether it's time management is your weakness. And you do that, well, hour after hour, whether it's shopping, whether it's gaming, whether it's gambling, whether it's social media posting, whether it's reading social media posts, whether it's adult entertainment, whatever the case might be, they find out what your weakness is in the flesh. Even if they don't say, we're looking for their weakness in the flesh, they find out what your weakness is in the flesh, and they tailor their offerings to exploit that weakness. Now, child of God, that might just sound like good business, but I think that sounds like Satan to me. And that's not just me being conspiracy theorist again. The enemy takes these things that might just be good business, good capitalism, good, the American way. I'm just out here trying to make a buck. This is the American dream. And Satan takes those things. Wow, you have an algorithm to appease to the flesh of each individual? I can use that. Of course he can get involved. They tailor their offerings to exploit our flesh, and he's satisfied with it. James 1 and verse 13 says this: Let no one say when he is tested. Let no one say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God. Not, God doesn't lure us with something and dangle it in front of us. Let me say it that way and say, come on, let's see if you're going to sin. He doesn't do that. That's not how he is. Let no one say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. Then when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death. The Lord isn't tempting us with such things. These algorithms are designed for that, designed to tempt us. It's just one way that the enemy can slide in. They know how to entice. Their existence depends on enticing you. They don't care what the fallout is. They don't care what the ramifications are to you, provided that they get their clicks, that they get their money, that they get their transfers, that they get all of the things that they're looking for. And so often it comes down to the dollar. It is indeed, as our text says there in verse 2 of Proverbs 23, Put a knife to your throat if you are a man given to appetite. If you sit down before the ruler and you aren't considerate of what you're doing, if you aren't considerate of the damage that can come, well, you might as well just... Well, you're sticking, at least you're holding yourself hostage to that. I read a story, she'll probably come up in another time, but I read a story about a therapist. She's a psychiatrist. It was in a Wall Street Journal. I don't read the Wall Street Journal, but in case I'm speaking of intellectual property of something, I don't want to violate any copyright rules. I don't read the Wall Street Journal. I'm not financially minded, but the story was there. She's a psychiatrist, and she's a therapist, and she's educated in addictions and impulsive behaviors and all of these things. She counsels people on how to deal with such things, and she found herself hopelessly and entirely addicted to gambling online. And while she was giving therapy to people on their own addictions, she would leave there immediately and go take her break or go home and get on her phone and gamble and gamble and gamble on all these very cool, very fun, very colorful games that were on her phone. I won't go into all of it today, but in less than 2 years, she was $500,000 in debt. She was fully aware of how irrational her behavior was, how illogical, how damaging it was. She was fully aware of how she would counsel her people on how to deal with that. She was unable to take care of herself in it. What was interesting was how they addressed her. And again, being a little bit informative, even if not in Scripture this morning. What they did was once she started spending a certain amount of money, they appointed what they called a host to her. An employee from the gambling the app and the platform that she preferred. They appointed this person, a person specifically with a name and everything, and he was hers. And so he would say, hey, how are you doing? Here's some credits. And by credit, $250, $500 in the gambling app, so on and so forth. And she would find herself losing that over the course of time, up and down and up and down, but mostly down. And when she was down, all of a sudden, she would get a call from him or a text from him or an email from him saying, feeling down? Here's $500. And she'd be like, woo! And she'd go right back into it. I mean, I'm telling you, man, it's so serpent-like, isn't it? It's so geared for it. Any time that she would say, I really need to quit, I'm doing terrible, he'd say, oh, you know, maybe this will get you back on the right track. And he'd give her $500, $250, which she would promptly go and spend. It was just cyclical that way. And it was always with that intent. Hope this gets you back on track. While they did everything that they could to make sure they fleeced her of everything before she went completely and entirely derailed. They knew what she gambled, when she gambled, how she gambled, what games she preferred, how much she won and lost, and plugged her into their algorithm and deemed when it was to their best interest to give her money. And they did, until she no longer had any money. And then all of a sudden, they were gone. They crafted their delicacies, saints, based on her interests and her habits and her desires, and they kept her coming back promising better. What did our text call these delicacies? Do not desire his delicacies, for they are deceptive food. Looking at something that feels good in the moment at the expense of everything that actually is good for eternity. Looking at what is feeling good in this moment. And again, it is such a picture, such an image. It is real life, figurative illustration of exactly how Satan works in our lives. The delicacies that are offered up by our phones and our computers and those ones who are behind introducing the stuff that's on them to us and bringing them into our lives, that's deceptive food. They offer something that feels good, seems good, tastes good in the moment. But they're destructive and they're damaging, and we understand this. We'll close with Daniel chapter 1. It's profitless to us. Again, I mentioned Numbers 11. They complained against God and what he offered them food-wise, very specifically food. And they looked for something else that was deceptive. They forgot. They forgot how, yes, they might have had cucumbers and leeks and all of that, but it must have just tasted really good while the whip was on their back, you know, mixed in with straw and mud and all of those things. They forgot about that. That food was deceptive to them. In Daniel chapter 1, we have a little bit of a, I'd say it's a happier outcome, to be sure. Daniel chapter 1. You'll remember that Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, they were captured and taken into the court of Nebuchadnezzar when Jerusalem was captured because they exhibited promise. They were capable young men and had a bright future. Nebuchadnezzar wanted to have them in his court because that would then support his own operation. And so among the things that he offered them in his court was, surprise, surprise, delicacies from his own table. But you can see that these men, and Daniel specifically, considered what was being set before them when they sat down to eat. Daniel purposed in his heart, it says in Daniel 1 verse 8, he set in his heart, set in his mind that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. He thought about it beforehand. He didn't sit down there and think, look at all this stuff here, and then have all this temptation, so on and so forth. He made it purposed in his heart. He set himself before. Purposed in his heart, he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies. Move down to verse 11. So Daniel said to the steward, whom the chief of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants for 10 days. Let them give us vegetables. King James has pulse, I believe, to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be examined before you, and the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies. And as you see fit, so deal with your servants. But give us a chance. Give us a chance to sustain ourselves only on this, and not this that, according to our law, would defile us. Might be tasty. I imagine Nebuchadnezzar had some fine cooks, fine chefs. I imagine that it was quite satisfactory as far as taste would go, these delicacies. But they said, you know what? Give us the rutabaga. Give us some asparagus, some broccoli back there. Whatever the case might have been. I don't think that they would have chosen that for taste's sake. Some of us have taken up being vegetarians and vegans and the like. You can tell me all you want to how great carrot juice tastes or how great artichoke hearts are. Man, give me a steak any day. You're not going to convince me it's any better. I want my burger from time to time. I'll do what it takes to be healthy, certainly. But I think that these ones, it was more than just natural health that they were looking for, obviously. They were looking to not be defiled, and they set their heart accordingly. So he consented with them in this matter and tested them 10 days as they requested. At the end of 10 days, man, wouldn't you know, when you obey God, it benefits you spiritually and naturally. At the end of 10 days, their features appeared better and fatter in flesh than all the young men who ate the portion of the king's delicacy. Thus the steward took away their portion of delicacies and the wine that they were to drink and gave them vegetables. It's working for you. You know, when we put away the thing that would rule us, when we get rid of the things, not this, but when we get rid of the things inside there that would be defiling to us, it will profit us, especially spiritually, but even physically. It affects our natural lives. It affects who we are. I'm not going to go into that much further this morning. But I'll just say that there is physical benefit as well as spiritual benefit in not allowing ourselves to just serve our fleshly appetites. And these ones didn't allow themselves to be ruled by their flesh. They were not taken in by deceptive food. I believe that they believe what Jesus then said back in John 6 and 63, some centuries after Daniel. Jesus said this, but he says, it is the spirit, is the spirit who gives life. The flesh profits nothing. Why would I feed the flesh? Why would I satisfy the flesh? Now I'll feed it, of course, but why would I satisfy just what is solely fleshy? Why would I seek to make it my primary concern? Why would I allow my flesh to rule myself? Why would I allow anything that leads into and seeks to serve my flesh first and foremost? Why would I allow it to rule? Here's that passage that Joel read a moment ago. Therefore, do not let sin reign in your mortal bodies, in Romans 6:12. Do not let sin reign in your mortal body or anything that would invite that or that would usher that into your life, that you should obey it in its lust. Do not present your members as instruments of unrighteousness to sin, but present yourselves to God as being alive from the dead, and your members as instruments of righteousness to God, not instruments to the corporate world of the algorithm and to the almighty dollar that is provided by satisfying our flesh in whatever capacity that would be drawn from us from these phones. Saints, when you sit down to eat with a ruler, consider carefully what is before you. And put a knife to your throat if you are a man or a woman given to appetite. Do not desire his delicacies, for they are deceptive food. There's such a fear that joy cannot be had without TikTok, without Netflix, without DraftKings. If you don't know what some of these things are, good for you. Man, hats off, and I'm grateful. Be grateful that there's not happiness without Royal Match or Candy Crush or so on and so forth. And there's such a fixation on having these things with us at all times, at hand, in hand, on hand, 24/7. We feel like we can't do without them. And if you're sitting there and the thought of the pastor telling you, well, is he going to tell me to throw it away? And if it gives you anxiety, man, take that to the Lord, because that's precisely what I'm speaking to this morning. There's a belief that these things have to be allowed to rule our lives in order for us to function, in order for us to have any kind of social interaction or to just be appropriated into the culture. Saints, I assure you, they don't have to rule your life. They do not have to. This is a tool. If it helps you in your work, so be it. Use it for that. If it helps you to function, if it helps you to have some measure of quiet, unwinding, something like that, as it helps you, as our brother said, I mean, very capably this morning, as it helps you to draw near to the Lord in relaxing to a certain measure so that you can have your heart and your mind in a place that is receptive to the things of God, so be it. It's a tool in that measure as well. But if you allow this to rule yourself, and we'll consider a number of different ways how it does indeed rule and specifically what it will do, let me inform you and implore you with the intent of your good. It's okay to unplug these things. It's okay to unplug from these things. Understand, we do not need to allow this thing that caters to our flesh to rule us. May it not be so, child of God.